A bolt of lightning flashes across a blue circle, forming the logo for Touchstone Pictures.
Etzel!
Touchstone Pictures presents a Jacob Company production, a Brian De Palma film.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition.
A rocket streaks into a bright blue sky and explodes, showering a garden party with ticker tape. Mission to Mars.
Now, Uncle Phil will launch another rocket just as soon as he completes his fuel intake.
Thanks, darling. Now you know, it takes 6 months just to reach Mars. Then a year on the surface, 6 months back, it's like 2 years, you know? Anyway, I guess what I'm trying to say here is that, you know, this being my last night on Earth and everything, this could be a very precious memory for me.
Nice try.
Liam,
get that thing out of your nose.
Why don't
you talk back to Mommy?
There
you have it.
Hey, Woody.
Yeah?
Our Mars 1 crew won't be heading back to Earth till 10 days after you guys land at our base camp with Mars 2.
Uh-huh.
Thank you, Rene. That's a pretty good long rendezvous, don't you think?
What are you suggesting, Sergei?
I think maybe you should bring a baseball bat. Yes, we will play American baseball on Mars. Our two crews,
please.
We could have ourselves a little solar system series.
You guys are foreigners. We crush you.
No, because we have equal crews. We have three men, one woman, same handicap.
Easy now, that's my wife you're talking about. And Terry just happens to be one hell of a shortstop.
Fast pitch, no steals, batter calls his own strikes. $1,000 make it interesting.
Oh, win all take all.
Good. You bring the balls.
You know, the best thing about our mission? On Mars 2, technically, I outrank her, so for the first time in our marriage, she's gonna have to do everything I say. Right, honey?
Yes, honey.
Yes, honey. Sir, a little salute. Help.
Yes, honey. Sir.
Yeah, I like it. It's good. Take that corn up there, all right?
Yes, sir.
I'm not sure how I feel about NASA allowing couples to go on this type of mission together. Well, not the personal Terry. I mean, it's just that it's a funny feeling for those of us staying behind. You know?
Yes, but you know that all the research shows that marriage will provide stability on these long duration trips.
Then they haven't studied some of the couples I've known.
Nope. Come on, baby, he's not coming.
They're on the driveway.
This isn't right. I mean, Jim deserves this too. All of his friends are here. It's my last night here.
Hey, it's your last night with us too.
I know. I'm sorry, baby.
Mm-hmm.
I love you, Deb.
I love you, too. Maybe you should spend some time with Bobby.
Yeah. Where is he?
Up in his fort.
Oh. Okay.
Millions of miles away. Deep space. So lonesome. So cold.
So lame, Nick.
Nick was with another young woman.
Knock, knock.
Luke finds his son in a play fort.
Bobby?
Little Bobby pouts forlornly.
Your friends are out there playing. What are you doing up here?
Who's gonna read to me now? Bedtime.
Your mother will.
I like when you do it. Now we're never gonna finish our book.
Bobby. Listen, I've been thinking about that too, okay? And what I figured out was, how about if I bring along my own copy? And then every night, wherever I am, I'll read a little bit more of it. And you and Mommy, you can read a little bit more of it wherever you are. It'll be kind of like we're reading it together. Because, hey, I don't know about you, but I'm kind of anxious to find out how old Ben Gunn got marooned on that island. You think that's a good idea?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Bobby and Luke share a smile and a hug. An expensive-looking silver Isuzu convertible pulls up on the drive. Behind the wheel in shades and a leather jacket is Jim McConnell, a dark-haired 40-something man with a furrowed brow. Luke's wife Deborah heads over.
Well, we were afraid you wouldn't come.
I gotta wait for your barbecue.
Oh.
After that?
Yes.
I was helpless.
All the way out in Galveston.
Something like that. It's his night, Deb. I didn't want to spoil it.
Spoil it? He has been going crazy looking for you.
Luke comes over.
Don't ever do that to me again.
How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good.
Here.
Thanks, man. A lot of people are going to be mighty glad to see you, you know that?
Yeah.
Come on, let's go in. You remember him?
They head for the party, which is decked out with red, white and blue balloons. Night falls. After the party, Jim, Woody and Luke sit on the edge of the kids' fort. They're all smiles. A caption, Dickinson, Texas, June 9, 2020.
Come on.
Just let that go.
As soon as you admit that it was a no-go situation.
It was a go situation.
3 months, no data stream. You're going to land the
just
ship anyway.
Just because you keep bringing it up doesn't make you right.
Just because you get loud doesn't make... Jim, settle it.
No, don't.
Settle it.
Don't look at
me. It's a go situation.
Well, this is exactly what I'm talking about.
I know that.
Come on. Three commanders. One ship. I don't think that's going to work. There's not enough rocket fuel in the world to get those egos off the ground. Come on.
we would have made a great crew.
Baby, this man was less seat.
Yeah. Come on, I'm a pretty good stick jockey. You call me if you need a flight test.
What is a stick jockey?
I'm a pretty good stick jockey.
Come on, Mr. Cover of Time magazine.
I landed a crippled Bach 2 shuttle.
Yeah, that's the stick jockey.
Stick jockey did that?
Okay, all right. I made a little noise, but putting the first footprints on Mars, that's for guys who wrote their PhD thesis on how to colonize a place. And for guys who read too much science fiction as a kid and still wear these little Flash Gordon rocket ships around their necks.
Very you read every damn science fiction book I did, and you're just not man enough to wear jewelry. That's all there is to that.
Yeah, take it.
Didn't know you weren't flashy. I ain't getting them.
Maggie would have loved to see you two clowns just one more time.
Jim looks at the other two and smiles warmly. Silver-haired in his early 40s, Woody puffs on a cigar. His smile fades. He hangs his head sadly. Also 40-ish with a goatee beard, Luke reaches across Woody and squeezes Jim's arm fondly.
Let me get up here.
On the driveway, Woody climbs into a sporty red convertible.
I don't know, Woodrow. I think it's about time you donated this baby to the museum.
Internal combustion, boys. Accept no substitutes. Jim, listen. If there's anything Terry and I can do, call
us,
all right?
I'm okay. Okay, really. Thanks.
Luke.
Yeah.
I'll see you when I get to Mars. Listen, don't solve all the mysteries of the universe, all right? Leave a little something for the next guy.
I'm not promising anything. You just bring some expensive beer.
All right. Will do. Godspeed.
Thanks, Woody.
Woody drives away. On the driveway, Luke and Jim watch him go. Jim smiles.
Should have been your mission, Jim. Yours and Maggie's.
Jim hangs his head.
Nobody ever wanted Mars the way you two did. Not even Woody. You two were 12 years training for this thing, hoping for this assignment. It's...
That's all over now.
If Maggie hadn't gotten sick, if you hadn't pulled yourself out of the rotation to take care of her, I mean,
Luke.
You... No, Jim, wait a minute. I want to say this. Look, I wanted this assignment, all right? But not like this, Jim. I would give all of this up in a second if it would bring Maggie back to us.
I know that. Look, all the years of training and planning for this mission have been a privilege. Mars is yours now. Go get it.
I will. You take care of yourself, Joe.
They shake hands and embrace.
You too, buddy.
See when I get back.
He heads indoors.
Hey, Luke.
Luke turns around.
Have a great ride.
Always do.
As Luke goes into the house, Jim looks down sadly and paces slowly up the driveway towards his parked Isuzu. The kid's fort nearby takes his eye. On the fort roof, there's a kid's drawing of a red planet in space. There's a rocket on the planet and an astronaut in a white suit. written under the picture in big red letters. Mars 1. Jim's gaze drops from the drawing of Mars to the dusty brown surface of the driveway. He puts his foot down in front of him, then pulls it back. He eyes the print his shoe has made in the dust. A small mechanical buggy with solar panels on its roof skitters over dusty brick-red ground strewn with boulders and rocks. The buggy heads along the craggy edge of a deep canyon. On the horizon, red cliffs rise up behind towering rock formations with irregular pointed spires. The foreboding sky hangs above the vista like a thin red mist, yellowing as it meets the clifftops. A caption reads, 13 months later, Cydonia, Mars. The buggy has a small camera at the front. The camera scans around as it heads for the cliffs. A heads-up display bears a green crosshair and flickering computer readouts. The buggy rolls along the bumpy ground through a deep, narrow gorge in the rocks. The gorge lies in shadow. The buggy emerges into bright light and proceeds along cracked, parched-looking ground. The camera scans. The buggy stops. The camera looks up to its right. In a white spacesuit, Luke bashes a rock with a small pickaxe.
Luke, you read me?
Yeah, Renee.
Luke, I just got Aries 8 online and, well, we think you're gonna want to see this for yourself.
Okay, copy that.
At base camp.
Now, is this a cinder cone?
No, it's too smooth. It's too angular. Volcanic upwelling, maybe.
No fissure, no caldera.
No, it's an upwelling for sure, but maybe not volcanic. I mean, look at the color and how shiny it is. That almost looks like... It looks like ice.
This far south.
Impossible. You can't have ice at this latitude. I mean, not unless there's like a...
Nick shares a glance with Sergei, Rene, and Luke.
Okay, how far away is that?
16 kilometers northeast. Take us 20 minutes to get there, Chief.
Okay, we're gonna send a packet to Mikra and we're going out there. Keep working.
Okay.
The World Space Station hangs above the Earth. A rotating wheel spins slowly around the central spindle, lined with solar panels. Some visitors head along a corridor inside. Jim's in the Mars Mission Control Room.
This is a truly anomalous formation. It's unlike anything that we've seen so far. The structure appears to be crystalline, at least from the angle that's displayed by Aries 8. Now, we're trying not to go too nuts up here, but we think there's a good chance that this could be an extrusion from some subsurface geothermal column of water. And of course, if that's correct, then we may have found the key to permanent human colonization. We think it wise to suspend judgment
until we
take our samples.
Geology and hydrology, we need to scramble on this. Full court press.
So we're going to head out there ASAP and take a look at this thing, try and get an idea of its composition. By the time you receive this, we should just about be on site.
The message from Mars 1 had a 20-minute lag. On Mars, a rover with four tall wheels passes the little buggy on a dry-looking plain. A vast mountain rises up in the middle distance. Sticking out from the side of the mountain peak is the mysterious crystalline structure, reflecting the light from the deep orange sky.
Anybody else hearing that?
Yeah. What is it?
I don't know. Sounds like, interference from the rover.
Can you fix it?
Hey, Skip. I can fix anything.
Love that modesty.
In spacesuits, the team look up at the mountain, which is surrounded by pointed rock formations.
Break out the radar. Let's see what this thing's made of.
At mission control.
Oh, yes, there's one more thing. Now, this is a very important, very special day for a good friend of ours back home. We know he's there right now. Now, he hates it when anybody makes any kind of a fuss about him, so I'm not going to mention his name. Because the last thing I would want to do would be to embarrass someone like Jim McConnell. Was that loud? Oh, well, it's done now.
I mean, it can't be right. It says there is metal under there. Solid metal.
No, that doesn't make any sense. You're reading a vein of ore, Renee.
No, it says it's under the old mountain.
All right, move it closer up the power, and we're going to try it again.
Hey, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Okay, everybody, I want you to take a look at Jim. Now, is he all red with one of those fake, oh, I'm a good sport grins on his face? That's right. Now, everybody, take a look at Ray. Does he have one of those, this wasn't in my mission plan looks on his face? Yeah. Uh-huh, I thought so. Well, there's nothing you can do about it, Ray. We're 100 million miles away. Okay, let's blow it out.
We're all set here, Chief.
All right, let's crank up the juice, see what's in this sucker.
Nick and Sergei switch on the portable radar, which scans from side to side at the foot of the mountain. Luke watches a monitor on the side of the rover. A green image of the mountain appears, with a pulsing red spot inside it. A flash of light and the image disappears.
What happened?
The radar stops scanning. Standing between the radar and the rover, Renee shrugs her shoulders. Sergei and Nick start forward across the plain. Dust is blown around their feet, flowing towards the rock formations. Suddenly, the dust rises like a whirlwind around the mountain, picking up rocks from the ground. The radar falls over on its tripod as Nick and Sergei stand transfixed in front of the rising spiral of dust and rocks. Red stones beneath their feet roll across the ground towards the burgeoning whirlwind. Sergei holds a camera up and frowns as the rock formations are ripped apart by the swirling cloud. The awesome thick cloud rises and engulfs the entire mountain by the rover. Luke stares up in astonishment. The whirlwind forms a peak and keeps rising.
Oh my God. You getting that, Sergei?
Uh-huh.
The peak becomes a huge tunnel of swirling cloud. It writhes from side to side like a tentacle, pointing down at the rover. Luke glances at Sergei and Nick. They take tentative steps backwards as the base of the whirlwind encroaches. Luke glances back up at the twisting peak. The tentacle is hollow, like a giant black eye. It bears down further towards the team. Luke glances at Renee, who struggles to keep her balance. The eye of the swirling storm widens and dips towards the plain, sucking dust and rocks past the wobbling team.
Renee
is blown off her feet. Luke staggers through the rising storm and rolls her over. A rock has smashed her visor and stuck there. A giant boulder crashes down behind Sergei and Nick. Luke struggles to keep his balance. Sergei is sucked towards the eye. He grabs the edge of the boulder and clings on. Nick's lifted off his feet by the powerful wind. Losing his grip, Sergei is sucked into the eye of the storm. Luke is buried beneath a pile of stones. Nick flails his arms and legs as he's pulled through the storm into the eye. As the storm clears, a gigantic statue of a humanoid face is revealed. The smooth oval face has wide eyes and a thin nose. On board Mars 2 above the Earth.
Problem, hatch door malfunction. Backup power fail, manual override fail. Solution?
Replace optical relay.
Piece of cake. God, who dreams up these nightmares?
Don't try to change the subject.
I'm not. We're talking about your sister's wedding,
right?
No, we're
talking about dancing lessons before my sister's wedding.
Do you mind? I'm in the middle of a catastrophic power failure here. Check.
Not effective.
Not effective.
Replace optical relay.
You're distracting me.
Woody, we're a married couple. Would it kill you to invite me out on the dance floor just once in
we
a while?
We danced. We danced at our wedding.
No,
we danced.
No, that's not dancing, Woody. That's you shuffling your feet around while you grab my butt. I'm talking about real dancing, you know? Cha-cha-cha, rumba, jitterbug.
Darn, face it. Some couples dance, some go to Mars. That's life. Test.
Effective, yeah. Woody, I'm serious. Just as soon as we get back home, we're starting lessons. Woody, if we never dance, people are going to think there's something wrong.
If they see me dance, they'll know there's something wrong.
This is highly unprofessional.
This is highly unprofessional, sir. You keep forgetting that, sir.
Cockpit, this is control. Cockpit, this is control.
Control, this is cockpit.
Yeah, Terry, it's Phil. They want us all to report to Micker ASAP.
Who's his report to Micker?
The little men live in my head.
Well, that's a negative, Phil. We're in the middle of a catastrophic power failure right now.
Yeah, Woody, it was Ray Beck. He told me to round up the team now.
The exact same moment that we lost the data stream, they picked up this intense burst of energy from Mars.
What do you mean intense?
Catastrophic.
What about the crew?
The level of energy in the pilots didn't seem survivable.
How about the Remo? Went into Mars orbit last week. Maybe you could give us some clue.
That's just what we try next. All right, the resupply module checked out fine. No instrument failures, orbit holding steady, but there was something else. The Remo's computer contained an uplink message, a very faint, highly distorted transmission from Mars One base camp.
Someone's alive.
Yes, yes, yes. Put up the message.
Still concentrating on the audio, but we've got a long way to go.
Show us whatever you've got. Show us.
On a monitor in mission control, Luke's face appears through static.
I have to make this fast. May I get another chance to make another chance to the side. There was a low sound that the low sound something came out of the top of the mountain and it hit us. They're dead. God, Nick. They're dead.
That's it.
Heading along a corridor.
I don't know. Luke must be in pretty bad shape if he hasn't just blasted out of there in the Earth return vehicle. That thing was designed so even one crew member could fly it back to Earth.
Even if Luke was in great shape, he couldn't get home. An energy pulse of that magnitude would have fried the ERV's computers.
Other than the computers, how do we think the ERV fared?
Well, so far our modeling says it should be in pretty good shape.
Which means it's going to be up to us to get new motherboards, drives, and software to Mars as fast as we can.
Right,
slow down. It's going to take us weeks just to analyze this data.
Right, but in the meantime, we got to be working up a mission plan.
Luke needs us now.
Luke may already be dead. And even if he's not, it's doubtful he's going to be able to transmit again. So, we wouldn't know whether it's safe to land. Until we were almost there.
The commander is called Ray. White-haired in his 60s, he is balding with a thick moustache. The team follow him, except handsome young Phil.
What about Seema? What about Seema? The Saturn imaging probe. It's going to slingshot around Mars on its way through the solar system. It could be retasked to take pictures, read radiation levels at Mars One base camp.
Wait. We are getting ahead of ourselves. You're forgetting the bigger problem. The orbits are all wrong. Our first decent launch window is almost 8 months from now.
Yes, but we can go earlier and get there faster. If we reconfigure the payload for extra fuel, we've modeled that, Ray. I've modeled it.
On paper, yes. But those dresses have never been tested in space.
The ship can take it.
Oh, the ship can take it. I wasn't thinking of just the ship.
They're in the crew room.
Ray, I know the protocols for a Mars recovery mission better than anybody because I designed them. And I'm telling you, these guys can do it.
He's right, Ray. We got a real shot here.
Ray looks at Jim levelly. He lifts a finger, then clenches his fist.
No. Give me an updated mission plan by 0800 tomorrow.
You'll have it by 0600. Let's go to work.
Jim hurries out of the room.
Chief, can I have a word?
Go ahead.
I no longer have the right crew.
What do you mean? Bjornstrom can be up here on the next shuttle.
Bjornstrom is a geologist. He's good, but not for this. My people just lost 8 months of training. This is a different mission with a different objective.
I haven't approved the mission yet.
Yes, but when you do, it ought to be given its best chance for success. I want McConnell to fly Wright's seat.
Oh. Jim McConnell is no longer in mission status.
Yeah, because you washed him out.
He washed himself out. He only had to pass a few more psych evaluations, but he refused to take them.
His wife was dead. He didn't want to lay on a couch and share her with strangers.
Yeah, that was his goal. But I had to make one, too. It was tough as hell. But I'd do it again.
For Christ's sake, Gray. She wasted away in front of his eyes. What was he supposed to do? Suck it up? Get with the program? What was his crime? That he showed a little emotion?
I couldn't trust him.
When Maggie died, it knocked the hell out of him. It knocked the hell out of all of us. You know and I know he's still the best we got. He and Maggie wrote the book on Mars. He's had more hours in The Sims than the rest of us put together. We can do this, Ray. You give me McConnell as co-pilot, and we will bring Luke home. That's a promise.
Craggy-faced Ray looks up with a frown, his eyes rove in thought. Mars Recovery, Mission Day 173. A white spacecraft with a cylindrical body surrounded by a spinning plate-shaped midsection hoves through deep space. The blue NASA logo is printed on the side of the craft above a porthole. Phil is behind the porthole. He watches a twisting tower of multicolored M&M sweets. They form a shape like a string of DNA floating in the zero-gravity environment. In the brightly lit chamber, Jim floats up behind Phil and taps him on the shoulder. He eyes the tower of sweets. Phil grins.
Hey. What's that?
That is the exact genetic composition of my ideal woman.
Jim smirks and picks out some sweets.
Hey. My baby.
Now what is it?
A frog?
Woody's in the cockpit. Monitors on the control desk show Mars from a distance. Jim floats up beside him.
Hey, Skip.
Hey. Take a look.
The surface of Mars billows.
Damn.
What do you make of that?
Dust storm. Southern hemisphere coming from the east. It's a big fella, too.
Headed straight for Mars One base camp.
Yeah. Could get a little hairy right at my landing time.
Yeah. Listen, we're gonna have to be able to move fast. Maybe even advance our ETA. These bad boys can cover a whole planet, last up to a year.
When does SEMA do her flyby?
Tomorrow morning, 0600. That's when we find out whether we come all this way for nothing.
My money's on Luke.
The slowly rotating section of the ship is lined with soft padding. By a work desk, elegant brunette Terry looks up, hearing the music. She secures a sleeve housing what she's working on and walks through a doorway, passing Phil, who's on some gym equipment in a white vest, working his arms up and down. Terry smiles and does a little dance as she steps onto the rotating circular section of the ship. The section orbits various chambers, including the crew's quarters. As Terry heads up a ladder, Phil passes by and checks his watch. A digital clock on the wall behind Jim, who's reading a book, says 0547. As Phil passes by, he appears to be walking on the wall. The rotating motion of the ship's midsection means the crew can walk, stand, and sit without floating in the zero gravity. The ladder comes round again, and Phil climbs up it. Jim shuts his book and checks his watch.
All those interested in dance lessons, please report to the promenade deck.
A hatch in the center of the rotating midsection leads to the promenade deck, where a beaming Terry and Woody spin round in zero gravity, performing dance moves through the air as the grinning Phil looks on and applauds by the wall. Jim comes through the round hatch and watches as Woody twirls Terry round by the hand and pulls her in close to his chest. She looks up at Woody and smiles. Holding a metal rail by the hatch, Jim smiles warmly at Woody and Terry.
And what, may I ask, brought this on?
Zero G, my friend. My last chance to be graceful. Once we're in Mars gravity, it's back to shuffling my feet and grabbing her butt.
Phil smirks. Jim shakes his head and smiles. Woody and Terry share a kiss, then smile at each other and embrace.
Incoming packet. Incoming packet.
It's SEMA.
They study a monitor.
Enhanced look at base camp?
Looks deserted.
Still standing, though. So's the ERV. And look, there's the greenhouse.
Well, we know Luke survived for at least a few hours. Now, are there any signs of recent activity?
There. Scan northeastern quadrant of base camp. The hell are those?
Three mounds in the ground.
Graves.
Wait a minute, there's only three of them. Well, that means that Luke's still gotta be alive. It means he's still down there.
It just means there's no one left to bury him.
Check the radiation levels.
Check rad levels.
Normal. Go to disaster site.
Go to 41 by 9.
Glowing interference covers the area by the mountain.
What's wrong? I don't know. Magnetic interference?
Go infrared.
Switch to infrared.
The interference remains.
It's got to be a problem with SEMA. I don't see how an earthquake 6 months ago could cause this kind of distortion.
That was no quake.
The ship floats gracefully through the darkness of space. Tiny bright stars flicker amongst the blackness. Mars, a perfect pink globe, hangs in the distance. The crew watch a flickering message from Mission Control.
We are going to continue analyzing this data and try to determine what the problem is with those images. We agree that the evidence with the graves is inconclusive and that a ground search is advisable. Frankly, we are stumped as you guys, but we'll keep on it. Be aware there are little sandstorms kicking up
Eurobabble
near Mars 1 base. But the big one you spotted is storming south. Shouldn't be a factor. We are all pretty excited around here. And we are sure you must be feeling the same. Enjoy your meal and get a good night's sleep.
Say it.
We anticipate.
Say it.
That tomorrow morning.
Say it.
You will be go.
Yes! Yes! Thank you. Thank you.
In his room, Jim puts a framed photo of his smiling raven-haired wife Maggie on a seat. He touches an icon on a monitor. A video plays. It's a party where everyone watches a specially made montage of Jim and Maggie through the years.
Hello. Oh,
baby Jimmy!
Yes, Jim's first spaceship was seriously underpowered.
Maggie was always a little starstruck.
Come on, show us those beautiful teeth.
When they met at the Air Force Academy, it was love at first flight. Woody's line. Woody's line.
Later during NASA training, things got a little tough.
Yes, Maggie always did keep Jim on a short leash.
Jim was always trying to explore a heavenly body.
Well, where are they going? Where are they going? 10,000 mile high club.
That's right.
Until...
Mission accomplished.
Oh,
man, what a fun wedding.
I'm so whacked.
I'm going in T-minus 3, T-minus 2, T-minus 1, contact.
Oh. Okay, we can stop. We can stop it there. Fast work.
I know what happened. I know what happened.
What's nerves?
Okay, guys. They are adding a wonderful chapter to their incredible story, and it's a pretty historic one.
to the newly appointed co-commanders of Mars One, Jim and Maggie.
Here, here.
I will drink to that.
Thank you. Hold it. It's not
over. Show him, show him, show him, show him.
Yeah, we got another
one.
Oh,
yeah, this is good. Check this out, guys.
There we go.
Bill's best work.
Oh, yeah.
Look, it's Mars.
Can you pick up these postcards at your local NASA souvenir shop?
You know what? When you two land up there, it will prove once and for all that there really is no intelligent life on Mars.
Thanks a lot.
Enough,
enough. You're going to eat those birds.
I don't think
yeah,
so.
Get in the camera.
I don't think so.
Here we go.
What
if
I'm right?
What if she's right?
It could be about us.
Okay.
It could just be about science.
Yes.
We'll do the science, and we'll do it really well, because that's what we've trained for. But what if there's more? In all our myths, in every human culture, Mars has always held a special attraction. What if that means something? The universe is not chaos, it's connection. Life reaches out for life. That's what we were born for, isn't it? To stand on a new world and look beyond it to the next one. It's who we are.
Jim reaches out and stops the video. It's paused on Maggie smiling.
You know, she may have been right. If that wasn't a quake down there, then something else caused it. Or planned it. You're thinking the same thing. It's never been out of my mind.
Woody's in the doorway. Jim looks round at the monitor.
I think she knew something, Woody. She was the only one of us who ever really believed there might be something down there. Yeah, well, we're not leaving until we find out. Deal? Deal.
The crew man the cockpit.
Range 6783 and closing 65 minutes until Mars orbital capture.
Okay, people, let's look sharp now. We're going to run this simulation one more time. Remember, if we overshoot, there's no coming back.
Yeah, and drifting through eternity will ruin your whole day.
Okay, Delta V systems initialized.
Charge primary APU.
Engaged and charged.
Select HPU fuel cells for run.
Engaged.
Time main bus to systems.
Power ready.
Select H2O2 HPU and fuel cells for open.
H2O2 fuel valves open.
Charge flow.
Charged and online.
Reset PW.
Set.
Transferred protocol data from EVA station.
Transferred. Awaiting track confirmation.
Micrometeoroids.
A tiny meteorite hits a glass panel and cuts Phil's hand. Drops of his blood float away through the ship.
Critical systems alert. Critical systems alert.
Breach hits in the hull.
We're outgassing, losing pressure.
Woody sealed the breach. Looks like it's behind Jim's helmet.
The blood spirals through the cracked visor.
90% atmosphere.
Woody takes a small gun-shaped device from a panel and heads for the promenade deck.
Critical systems alert. Critical systems alert.
He lifts Jim's helmet away from the wall and watches as the blood funnels into a tiny hole behind it.
We're losing pressure fast. We're gonna decompress.
Woody squirts gel from the device.
Computer, how long till zero atmosphere?
4 minutes, 9 seconds.
He plugs the gap.
Still outgassing in the lower half. Must be another hole down there. It's gotta be a big one.
Everybody switch to suit oxygen. Jim, you got the ship. I'm going EVA.
Copy.
Come on, people. Let's work the problem.
He removes his rocket ship necklace and hands it to Terry, who passes over his helmet.
80% atmosphere.
Jim, you gotta go get your spare helmet.
She helps Woody don his helmet.
Copy that, Jim.
There's no time. All the systems have crashed. I gotta shut down the head from below.
We're losing pressure, Jim. You could embolize.
Woody lifts his gloved fingers up to his helmet visor and kisses the glass from inside. He touches his fingers to Terry's visor, and she kisses where his fingers touch. Woody slowly turns with a wink.
70% atmosphere.
A quick burst of oxygen propels him towards the inner hatch, which Phil opens up. As Woody reaches the outer hatch, Jim floats onto the deck.
Phil, you've got to get the nav computers back online.
Jim, I've got an idea. If you guys can save enough atmosphere, I'll disconnect the power in the main computer bay and jumpstart the systems. I'd basically be doing a hard boot.
Has that been tested?
Are you kidding? These machines are way too expensive.
Do it.
Okay. I think this will work.
The outer hatch opens and Woody floats out.
60% atmosphere.
The only one without a helmet on, Jim clambers towards the midsection and scans around furtively. Phil heads for the cockpit. Jim climbs down the ladder and hurries over to a terminal. Outside in space, Woody uses joysticks attached to his backpack to maneuver himself towards the rotating midsection of the ship. He examines the hull.
Jim, how are we doing on the AG?
Hang on, one second, Woody.
50% atmosphere.
Jim, I've got oxygen.
Voice print identification. Not accepted. Voice print identification.
McConnell.
Accepted.
Shut down. Gravitational rotation.
Shutting down artificial gravitational rotation.
Vents on the hull emit plumes of air. The rotating midsection slows.
Jim, I've got the oxygen for you.
Hang on!
40% atmosphere.
Phil removes a panel in the cockpit.
Are you okay?
Yeah, fine.
I'm topside, Jim. Do you know which sector?
I'm working on it.
You better get some oxygen, Jim.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Woody floats around the midsection, which has completely stopped. Looking sweaty, Jim holds onto a railing. Phil feels behind the panel.
Come on.
Woody's eyes widen as he examines the hull.
Jesus. It's like looking for a needle in a haystack.
Okay, come on.
Give me some light in the hole so I can locate it.
I got a better idea.
A packet of Dr. Pepper drink floats nearby. Jim reaches for it.
Gotcha. Terry. Squeeze out the liquid. Stay there. Squeeze it out.
Jim.
Okay. Okay.
Gripping wires, Phil shuts his eyes. In the midsection, Terry squeezes the Dr. Pepper packet.
30% atmosphere.
Jim watches the path of the floating liquid.
Woody, the bridge is between sectors 5 and 6. 5, 6. Do you copy?
Copy. I'm heading there now.
The liquid freezes as it exits the hull.
You never did that in the simulator?
20% atmosphere.
Jim?
Phil pulls the wires apart. The lights go out. Terry drops towards Jim, who lies prone on the midsection floor.
10% atmosphere.
Jim.
She gives him oxygen.
Jim, talk to me. It's Terry.
Phil reconnects the wires. Woody plugs the breech.
Jim.
Come back.
Breathe.
Come back. Gotcha.
The lights come on.
Pressure stabilizing. Pressure stabilizing.
Jim's eyes open.
Jim?
20% atmosphere.
Hi, welcome back.
30% atmosphere.
It worked. Yes, it worked. Way to go, everybody. All right. Yeah.
There's a lot of scarring out here. I'm gonna check for other punctures.
Orbital insertion proximity alert. Orbital insertion proximity alert.
Negative, Woody. That is a negative. You have to get back inside. We have to do our checklist for orbital insertion.
Copy. I'm on my way.
He looks at Mars and smiles.
Hello, beautiful.
Entranced by the red planet, Woody maneuvers himself around the midsection and heads for the ship's outer hatch. Further along the ship, at the tail end, beneath a long communications tower, a thick fuel pipe is scarred with a dozen jagged holes. In the cockpit.
Prepare to initiate burn. Prepare to initiate burn.
Okay, we're ready to light this candle. Go, no go for breaking burn and MOI. Engines.
Online.
Go. Systems.
Online.
Go.
Nav.
Online.
Go. We are go for the burn. I am fueling engines.
Low charge. Online. Low charger activated.
A graphic of the ship turns blue. Blue fuel gushes out of the pipe, freezes in space, then breaks apart.
Optimum angle of entry in minus 7 degrees.
Countdown to initiate burn for orbital insertion.
6.
Unaware of the leak, Terry smiles at Woody.
5.
Orbital insertion proximity alert.
4.
Optimal insertion angle approaching.
Jim.
3.
Woody looks at Jim, who smiles and reaches for the ignition icon.
Optimal insertion angle imminent.
2.
Jim's finger hovers over the control monitor.
1.
Let's go to Mars.
The boosters ignite, the crew are rocked around, an explosion tears the engines off the back of the ship.
Attitude incorrect.
Shut down the engines.
Debris spirals into space.
Engines negative, no response. I have got no attitude control.
Manual separation, below the bolts.
Negative, the control module doesn't have enough thrust to correct this rotation.
We're too steep. We're falling into the atmosphere. Christ, this angle, we're gonna burn up.
How much time we got, Phil?
I don't know, 3 minutes? I don't know.
Where's the remote?
Resupply module, why? There's no way we're gonna be able to link up.
Where is it?
Resupply module located. Resupply module located.
It's close.
How close?
I don't know. That's gonna take some time.
Figure it out. We don't have time. They'll figure it out now.
Jim, we're dead stick. There's no way to maneuver this ship into link up.
Not the ship. Just us. We go EVA.
You want us to transfer in suits?
Jesus, Jim, if we don't make it. If we miss the remo.
There's no other choice. Phil, how close?
Intersection orbit with remo. Course intersection plotted.
1 kilometer, that's the best I can do.
Prepare to abandon ship. Let's go!
In spacesuits, the crew exit the ship via the outer hatch. They slowly float through passing debris attached to each other by a line. Their shadows are cast along the ship's hull as one by one they clear the hatch. Last in line, Phil grips the side of the hatch and screws his eyes shut. He opens his eyes and watches as the others float into space, squeezing air from their packs for momentum. Phil's eyes widen as he clocks the curve of planet Mars, then looks down at the line attached to him and follows the others into space. The 4 astronauts float high above the planet's surface. At the front, Woody slows, slackening the line. The others gently concertina together behind him. Phil checks in a wrist-mounted mirror.
What are you looking for?
Earth.
Hey, when we get back home, we really will have to try this out in the sim.
How are we doing on the fuel, Woody?
I'm at 50%. I don't see the remo.
A huge chunk of debris floats past towards the planet. Third in line, Terry scans around. As they hang above the pockmarked surface of Mars, a tiny capsule with two wing-like panels hoves into view on their left.
There it is. 45 left, 45 down.
Oh, Jesus. She's not where I thought she'd be.
We're gonna miss her.
What do you think?
You can't catch it. Not like this.
Use the tether. You'll have one, maybe two shots before she's out of reach.
Negative. It's too risky. If we miss it, we got nothing. I'll leave you the gun. Run a line out to the remote. I got enough fuel left for that.
You'll be going too fast.
I'll aim to overshoot. Break like hell and arc it in. Piece of cake.
Terry's wide-eyed.
I'll see you in a flash.
He winks at her, then turns himself around. Behind him, Jim's got a gun trailing a thin wire.
Unhook me.
Good to go.
Woody sets off away from the team. He moves quickly, attached to them only by the wire unspooling from the gun in Jim's hand. Jim, Terry, and Phil watch nervously as Woody heads towards the Remo capsule, which is below them.
Okay, I'm on a path to overshoot. I'm gonna take the edge off.
He pulls back on the joysticks attached to his pack. The air brakes activate, then peter out.
I'm out of fuel. Coming in hot. Still long.
A readout on Phil's wrist panel says, alert, overshoot. He shakes his head furtively.
Abandoning the unit. I'll break with suit jets.
He detaches the joysticks.
Suit jet's gone. I'm gonna make contact.
What velocity?
Impact's gonna be a little rough.
At what velocity?
32.
They share anxious frowns as Woody hares towards the Remo.
I'm gonna use the gun to slow you.
No. You slow me, I'll fall short.
It's too fast, Woody.
No choice. I'll be okay. Here we go.
He attaches the line.
Gotcha.
Woody!
He scrambles for a handhold.
Woody!
He flies off the edge of the Remo.
Woody! 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 Woody!
No.
He floats untethered beyond the capsule, framed by the surface of Mars.
Terry!
Woody!
Take the gun. Take it! Phil, hang on. Go!
She twists the spool, and the three of them are reeled towards the Remo.
Woody, what's your status?
Well, my suit jets are gone, and I'm still carrying a good deal of velocity.
As soon as we get hooked up, I'll come get you.
I'd have to say negative on that, Jim.
Negative on the transmission?
Oh, I heard you. Negative on the maneuver. I'm not retrievable.
Woody, you're not going that fast.
Well, it all comes down to the amount of fuel, honey. Suit jets are designed for attitude control, not travel. Retrieval just won't work.
Well, it's gotta work.
Hey, listen, I don't like it any more than you do.
Woody.
Run the numbers, Jim.
I am.
Insufficient fuel flashes up on his wrist panel.
You hang tight, Woody. We'll get in the Remo, drop her down, come scoop you up.
Sounds good, Jim.
It's gonna take us half an hour to get the Remo reoriented. Woody will be in the atmosphere by then.
Then we'll just have to get her moving faster.
We don't have time.
Listen to Jim, honey. It's a good plan.
No. We're gonna come get you.
They near the Remo.
Okay, get ready for brakes.
Come on now.
On my mark. Three.
You can do it.
Two.
You can do it.
One.
Come on.
Mark.
Come on. Yeah.
Everybody good?
We're on, Jim. Way to go. Way to go. Good job.
All right. There won't be enough room for us inside. As soon as I get the hatch open, let's start dumping the cargo.
Copy that.
Hang on, Woody.
Will do, Jim.
Still floating alone beyond the Remo, Woody looks into his wrist mirror. Some debris burns in the atmosphere behind him. He looks rueful.
Hello, beautiful.
Jim opens the Remo's hatch.
Come on. All right. It's open.
Terry flies towards Woody.
Terry, no!
Terry, come back! You'll never make it!
Terry, what are you doing?
I'll tell you what I'm not doing, Woody. I'm not gonna watch you die.
Terry.
you do the same for me.
Phil, get inside, dump the cargo, and start the systems. Now!
No, I would not if it was impossible.
I can do it.
No, you can't. You don't have enough fuel to come get me and get us back.
She grimaces.
Listen to me, goddammit. You have to stop, and you have to stop now.
He's right, Terry. It's no use.
She looks at her wrist panel. Point of no return flashes up. She screws her eyes shut. Halfway towards Woody, she brings herself to a stop.
Okay, honey. You gotta go back now.
The hell I do.
She holds up the gun and fires the wire, which has a hook attached. It unspools, heading towards Woody, who raises his hands to catch it. He smiles, a glint of hope in his eye. The wire arrows towards him, then stops, just out of reach. Terry stares in disbelief as the hook on the end of the wire floats further out of Woody's reach. Woody watches helplessly. Jim frowns furtively. In the Remo, Phil stops dumping the cargo.
What are you doing?
I'm gonna jet in a little closer and try again.
Terry, you spend any fuel getting closer, you won't get back. And if anyone tries to get you, they'll die too. Honey, please. Please go back. Go back and help the others to the surface.
I am not losing you!
I can't let you do it.
No.
I can't let you die. I'm sorry.
Wait. What are you doing?
I love you, honey.
No! No!
God, I love you.
Woody! Don't! Woody! Woody! Don't! No!
He takes off his helmet.
No! Please, God, no!
Jim shuts his eyes and hangs his head.
Woody!
His face a frozen death mask, his hands by his head, Woody floats further away.
Come back, Terry. He's gone.
No. No.
Terry.
No.
We need you.
Terry turns herself around and activates her pack. She heads for the Remo, leaving Woody's body behind. The World Space Station hangs above the Earth. Ray drinks from a mug in the crew room.
We've got some new data just coming in. It doesn't make any sense. We're not sure how to read this.
Data?
Yes. Telemetry reports the Remo left its orbit and reached the Martian surface.
Crashed?
No, sir. Under power.
Why?
63 minutes after Mars Recovery went offline. So the graph shows a controlled descent, but it doesn't make any sense.
Use the Remo as a lander. It's Jim McConnell. It's gotta be. Nobody else could have pulled this off. Nobody else.
Under a muddy yellow Martian sky, the Remo lies on its side on the planet's surface. A crumpled parachute lies alongside it, attached to the capsule by ropes. In their suits, Terry, Jim and Phil drag the Remo's hatch like a sled, with supplies attached to it. They struggle through clouds of billowing dust and climb up a ridge which leads towards the Mars One base camp. The camp has a large cylinder with a billowing tent attached to one side. The team retrieve an American flag lying on the ground. Stones slide off the Stars and Stripes. They replant the flag in the ground via its pole. They stand around the flag as it billows in the breeze. Phil heads towards the deserted-looking ERV lander and climbs up a ladder on the outside. At the top of the ladder, he reaches for a closed hatch in the hull. The hatch swings open. He looks inside.
I've got access to the ERV. I'm gonna go inside.
Beside a weathered-looking contraption, Terry scrapes through a pile of stones and retrieves a controller with a wire attached to it.
Terry, is the oxygen generator okay?
Yeah. It's gonna take a while to get back to 100% capacity, though.
Okay, I'm entering the ham.
Jim pushes open a hatch inside the camp and shines a torch around. He looks at his wrist panel.
There's still oxygen in here.
It's just a little spooky. I don't like the dark at all. Need some lights. Need some lights. Where are we? Here we go.
The lights come on.
ERV appears to be structurally intact.
He pushes a button and watches the monitor. Outside, Terry inspects the oxygen generator.
Yeah, but just as we thought, the computers are fried.
Copy that. I got busted filters here. Clogged intakes. Hell of a cleanup job, but so far no major damage.
A door opens inside the camp and Jim steps through into a darkened chamber lined with pot plants. He takes a few paces into the shadows and shines his torch around. He switches off the torch and heads along the corridor towards the greenhouse, which is filled with plants and foliage. Hanging branches and leaves shake gently in the breeze. His face illuminated by lights inside his helmet visor, Jim looks round with a fixed frown. He stares up at the tent-like canopy rocking in the wind above him.
I'm in the greenhouse. You gotta see this.
What is it, Jim?
It's working.
He spots a bubbling tank of liquid. He scans amongst the thick foliage. He spots a metal tray. There's a pool of water inside it.
I'll be damned.
He dips his gloved finger in the tray. He removes his helmet and breathes. Luke stands behind him wild-eyed, with long matted dreads. Unaware of Luke, Jim takes a deep breath and sniffs the air with a frown. His eyes rove around the greenhouse. He spots something on the table in front of him and reaches out. He picks up the birthday cake from the video message Luke and his crew sent. The candle is still in the middle of it. Jim smiles, then looks into the pool of water in the tray. He spots the reflection of a pickaxe raised behind his head. His eyes widen and he spins. Luke drops his arm and staggers back against some containers. Jim takes a step forward.
Look!
Luke lurches at Jim, pickaxe raised. Jim holds him at bay.
You're not here! You're not here!
Luke pushes Jim to the floor.
Your wife is Deborah! Your son is Bobby!
No!
You were reading Treasure Island with... Luke. It's all right. It's me.
No, wait! He's all right.
Phil grabbed Luke. He lets go. An astonished Luke spots Terry heading through the greenhouse.
Terry.
She smiles warmly. Luke looks at them in turn.
Jim, what are you doing here? You're not supposed to be here. How are you here?
This is a rescue mission. What do you want in me, right, Steve?
Luke collapses in sobs.
I can't.
The others share smiles. Jim pats Luke on the back.
Well, where is he? Where is Woody?
Tears in his eyes, Luke scans around, smiling, then clocks their expressions. His smile fades. Jim glances sadly at Terry and shakes his head.
He didn't make it.
Her helmet's still on. Terry's eyes glisten behind her visor. She looks down as her lips shake. Luke holds his head.
You know, I give them CO2 and light, and they give me oxygen and food. It's actually not a bad arrangement. You know? It's kind of like a marriage, really, except not as many fights. I mean, some fights.
Luke, tell us what happened here.
Luke stops rearranging the plants.
We fired the radar, and it came and. They all died.
What do you mean? What came?
The forest came out of the top of the mountain and everybody died, but I was spared. Why? It had to be for a reason. And then all of a sudden, I knew the reason why. It's so someone would be left to figure out the secret. Just come.
He hurries off.
Is it just me? Is he a few meal packs short of a picnic?
Long-term exposure to low gravity can have an adverse impact on the brain. Or then he could be suffering from some form of asphyxia.
Or maybe his whole crew died and he's been marooned alone on Mars for a year. It's a miracle he survived this long. I better bring him up to speed.
Jim heads along a gantry through the greenhouse after Luke. With their helmets off, Terry and Phil share a dubious glance.
Great.
In their helmets outside the camp.
So let me be sure I understand this. Your ship blew up. With all its supplies, then you emptied all the cargo out of the Remo and it was totaled on landing. You got no food, no water, no spare oxygen. Nothing other than what I'm looking at right here. What kind of rescue mission is this, Jim?
That kind.
Check it out. New nav boards for the ERV. I got 4 round-trip tickets, baby, right in here.
Oh. Thank you, God. Oh, thank God.
The 4 of them stand before the makeshift graves.
When I came to and dug myself out of the sand, my faceplate was cracked. It was leaking, leaking badly. I barely made it back to base. It was weeks before I could work up the nerve to go back out there and look for their bodies. Renee was the only one I could find, but it just didn't seem right somehow to just dig one grave. Oh, God.
His suit covered in thick red dust, Luke hangs his head and shakes it sadly. He steps out of line and trudges past the graves. Jim follows him. They both stare at the stormy Martian horizon.
Has it been blowing like this for a while?
Yeah.
We saw a big storm on our screens, but Nickers said it was turning south.
If it holds course.
Luke, this whatever it was, this force. You said it came directly out of the top of the mountain?
Don't you believe me? That's okay, Jim. You don't believe me, that's okay. But I'm not crazy. I know that much. I'm not crazy.
What do you mean by it's secret? What secret?
Listen, hundreds of millions of years have gone by, okay? You've got erosion, lava flow, sandstorms, meteor impacts. Hell, in that much time, the whole surface of the planet would have changed. So it's no wonder we never saw it before. I mean, we saw it, but not like they meant us to. There was too much dirt on it.
So what, Luke?
Saw this.
Next to a wire sculpture of the whirlwind, he flicks on a monitor which shows different images of the massive statue which was inside the mountain.
Jesus.
Look, what are you trying to tell us? You're trying to
tell us
that
that's the face. It's the face. It's real. Somebody put that thing there. It's not us.
Jim.
Terry shakes her head.
It's not possible.
What about the sound you heard before the explosion?
Oh, yeah, good, Jim. That's the key. That's the key.
He sits at the ramshackle terminal and types.
You hear that? This pauses. Uh-huh. Do you hear the pauses? That's what made me realize it's a pattern. It's a repeating pattern.
Mathematical?
Mm-hmm. That occurred to me too.
He types some more. The monitor brings up the sound as a waveform-style graphic.
There are distinct blocks within each pattern, and within each block, the tones come in groups of three. It's 3-3-3, 3-3-3, it's always 3-3-3, it's always the same. See, for months I struggled to analyze it, you know, trying different constructs, and then I thought about dimensions.
X, Y, Z coordinates.
Exactly. Three groups equals three dimensions. So I assigned different graphic values to each block, group, and tone, and I came up with this.
The waveform becomes a connected chain of spheres, like a DNA strand.
Hello.
Oh my God. Is that what I think it is?
DNA?
You see it?
Yeah. It's a model of DNA.
So somebody left that thing here. Okay, somebody other than human. But, what is it?
It's a signature. It's a self-portrait of whatever species created the face.
Yeah, but, that DNA looks human.
No, it's not. It's missing the last pair of chromosomes, see?
Well, it's close. It's damn close.
Close? The difference between man and ape is less than 3% genetic material. But that 3% gives you Einstein, Mozart.
Jack the Ripper.
Yeah, he's right.
Phil grips the neck of his suit and shivers slightly. They stare at the multicolored strand of DNA on the monitor. Luke fiddles with his graying beard. Inside the module attached to the greenhouse, Luke has shaved off his beard and cut his hair. Jim goes through supplies.
4 pallets, oral topical medications, splints, bandages, 1 complete med pack.
With 8 tubes of antifungal cream. Well, at least we won't rash to death.
Luke, how do you feel?
Lighter. A lot lighter.
Welcome back.
Thanks, man.
Terry comes in from outside.
The backup generator is salvageable, so are 2 of the solar panels. I'm pretty sure I can get the oxygen still back into production, so we're not in such bad shape, considering.
That's good, Terry.
Good work.
Jim spills some M&Ms.
Look at this. Phil's idea of absolute essentials.
Of course.
Jim kneels down with a smile to pick up the sweets, then stops and frowns at the multicolored spheres spread out on the floor of the module. He recalls grabbing some sweets floating in zero gravity on board the Mars recovery ship.
Hey, hey, hey! Hey! My baby.
It's not a signature. What? The noise from the face, it's not a signature. It's a test.
It's asking us for the right answer. It wants us to put in the missing pair of chromosomes.
Why?
To prove that we're human.
We fired radar into that thing, concentrated radio waves, and you're saying...
Which it interpreted as the wrong answer. It could be like a security alarm. When it gets an incorrect response, it defends itself.
So what happens when it gets the right answer?
Well... I don't know that, Phil. But we gotta find out.
Phil talks to them via headset as he goes through the wiring inside the ERV. In the base camp, Jim glances at Luke and Terry, then paces around. Terry sits down with a frown.
Luke, what if we work this the other way? We figure out which tones would be equivalent to the missing chromosomes and then dub them into your recording of the signal. Is that possible?
Yeah, I think so.
Good, good, good. What about the radar gun? Will it accept the input so we can transmit a completed signal back to the face?
Whoa, 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 whoa. Hold on, Jim. What if you're wrong? Whoever goes out there... I mean, what if you're wrong? 3 people have already died over that thing.
4.
Jim looks round at Terry, who's forlorn.
Terry. If we leave here without getting some answers, they all died in vain.
We don't have to go out there.
The gigantic face sits on the plain where the mountain used to be, staring up into the red Martian sky. The small solar-powered camera buggy rolls across the ground below. At the base camp in their suits,
static here. Something's interfering.
Yeah, the antenna got knocked around pretty badly in the blast. This is the best resolution I think we're gonna be able to get.
All right, guys. I got the nav boards. I'm sealing the airlock.
Check the video feed.
Video feed looks good.
They watch a portable screen.
How close do we have to get?
I'm not sure. Maybe I'll stop it right over there by that rock.
Do it. Good.
The buggy stops, facing the rock. The portable screen has controls for the buggy attached. Luke maneuvers them. The buggy backs up and stops by the side of the rock. It's 100 or so meters from the sheer edge of the face. There's a thick seam running up the side of the statue. Jim nods at Luke, who looks round at Terry and Phil.
Okay. Here we go.
He closes, then opens his eyes and pushes the trigger button. A speaker mounted on the front of the buggy swivels from side to side. In the airlock at the base camp, the team exchange nervous glances as they watch the screen. The speaker stops. Terry and Phil nervously look at each other. A light shines from the seam at the base of the statue. Jim leans forward and squints at the screen.
Look at that, Jim. It worked. Oh, God, it worked.
Guys, I don't know what the hell we just did, but does that look to you like a hostile gesture?
No. More like an invitation.
Or another test.
Check for radiation.
Normal. Seismic normal. Anemometer steady.
Luke. Does the rover still work?
The entire length of the seam emits a brilliant white light. The rover is parked at the foot of the seam. Luke, Jim, and Terry step towards the light in their suits.
Phil, do you read?
Yeah, Jim, your signal's breaking up a little in the storm, but I read you.
We're at the face. We're gonna need a few minutes here. Same deadline. Launch at 1950 with or without us, copy?
Copy that.
Jim, you sure you wanna do this?
I'm not sure about anything anymore. But I didn't come 100 million miles just to turn back in the last 10 feet.
He looks around at Terry, then at Luke. Both of them return his level gaze.
Yeah.
As they step towards the light, long shadows are cast on the red ground behind them. Phil tries the controls in the ERV.
Yes. Yes, computers are online. I am gonna start loading software.
Terry, Luke, and Jim walk through the narrow seam into an entirely white space. The seam closes behind them.
The surface seems firm and level.
Roger that. The texture's smooth.
I've got good footing. No obstructions. Let's check out PSI.
Guys, I gotta tell you. We're losing visibility here really fast. Over.
It's solid. We're trapped.
Don't move. Just keep this orientation.
Guys? Luke? Terry, Jim?
Phil, can you still hear me?
Is anyone there? Over.
Inside the face, Jim's eyes rove. He stares into the whiteness ahead. By the closed seam.
That's it. There's no handles. We're not getting out here unless they let us out.
Jim considers, then taps the control panel on the suit's wrist. The environment readings show a mixture of nitrogen and oxygen. Jim reaches for the connection between his sleeve and glove, then twists the glove loose.
Jim.
Jim, what are you doing? Stop
Jim.
It, stop it. Jim, you're depressurizing.
Come
on.
Now.
As Terry and Luke rush over, Jim calmly observes his wrist beneath the suit.
There's pressure in here.
Above Mars atmospheric. It's impossible.
We're millions of miles from Earth inside a giant white face. What's impossible?
There's 12 PSI in here. Nitrogen and oxygen.
Otherwise known as air.
Oh,
Jim's eyes rove. He reaches for the clips on his helmet.
Hey, wait, Jim, I haven't checked the lethal choice guesses, and I haven't.
Doing likewise, Luke nods at Terry.
What the hell?
They all take off their helmets, then their gloves, and the black balaclavas covering their hair. They turn round as a gap in the bright white environment opens up, revealing a rectangle of black space. Jim frowns at Terry, who's wide-eyed. Alongside her, Luke also frowns. Side by side with their helmets in their hands, they slowly step towards the black rectangle, which is a few feet taller than they are. As they cross the dividing line between white and black, a vast moving image of the solar system appears around them. Luke reaches out as they walk through a flowing asteroid field at the edge of the system. Red lines trace the orbit of the planets around the huge glowing sun in the middle of the solar system. The sun is reflected in the shiny black surface of the floor.
Look.
A blue and green planet, much like Earth, passes behind them.
Is that what I think it is?
Yeah. It's Mars.
A massive meteor strikes the planet, devastating the surface, turning it grey and leaving a gigantic smouldering crater in its wake. A shadow passes over the planet. A spindly alien figure stands silhouetted against the sun and has a teardrop-shaped head and mottled beige skin. Towering over the shell-shocked human team, it steps forward towards Mars and emerges from the shadows cast by the sunlight. Its skin glows with glittering light. Its head, much the same as the statue of the face, bears huge blue almond-shaped eyes. The alien bows its head and sheds a tear. The team look up in astonishment. Luke looks round at Mars. They surround the globe with the alien alongside them. Thousands of ships launch off the surface of the planet and fly into space. The golden wedge-shaped ship streaked past the team, heading for a distant swirling galaxy.
That's where they went.
One ship hovers over Mars' surface.
Look. One stayed behind.
Jim looks round at the alien, which reaches into its translucent chest, then opens its hand, revealing the strand of DNA they found in the signal from the face. The alien holds up its long, four-fingered hand, and the DNA strand funnels into the ship, which turns around and powers through the solar system towards another planet.
Earth, before the continent separated.
The ship crashes into the ocean. Cell-like beings float up through the water, becoming fish, which grow legs and walk onto the land.
My God, that's it. Hundreds of millions of years ago, there was a sudden explosion of life on Earth. The first multi-celled plants and animals appeared. No one has ever understood why or how it happened.
The walking creatures become dinosaurs, which quickly evolve into mammals, then bison. A caveman chases them across the plain. More men appear, bearing torches and spears. The glowing torches become spots of light in a vast civilized city. The lights glitter and glow through the darkness of space, high above the Earth's surface. The alien reaches out with its long fingers. Jim takes hold with his hand, then reaches towards Terry, who takes his hand and looks up at the towering alien. She joins hands with Luke, who joins hands with the alien, closing the circle around the Earth.
They seeded Earth.
The Earth disappears.
They're us. Or them.
The alien gestures at the floor. A bright glowing disc appears by their feet. Jim looks up at the alien, who smiles and slowly nods at him. Jim smiles and nods. The alien shimmers and disappears. On the ERV.
Luke, Terry, Jim, anyone, ERV to Rover. Rover, this is ERV. Does anyone copy? Does anyone copy?
Inside the face, Jim, Terry, and Luke stand around the disc. A line of hollow circles appear leading up to it.
ERV to Rover. Rover, this is ERV. Do you copy?
Phil?
Oh, thank God, guys.
Phil, we read you.
Listen, the storm is just bad, really bad. It's going to totally sock us in a few minutes. You've got to get back to the ship.
Phil?
You've got to get back to the ship.
Phil?
We're in a ship. This is a ship. And the countdown's already started.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, let's get the hell out of here. Jim? Jim?
He loiters by the disc.
Come on, we gotta go. I'm not coming with you.
What? What are you talking about? We've gotta get home?
That's where I'm going. Don't you see? That's what all this is for. Terry, you were right. This is an invitation. This is an invitation for us to follow them home. I'm going. It's what I was born for. Like Maggie said. To stand on a new world and look beyond it to the next one. I know this is right. For me. But you're running out of time. You gotta get back to the ERV and you gotta get off this planet.
Luke steps towards Jim and reaches out his hand. Jim shakes it warmly.
Thank you for saving my life, buddy. It was a privilege.
Luke lets go and walks away. He waits by the rectangle of white light on the edge of the solar system. Jim walks over to stand face to face with Terry, who wipes away a tear.
I wish Woody were here to see you.
He is here, Terry. We wouldn't have made it without him.
He would have wanted you to have this.
She puts Woody's rocket ship necklace in the palm of his hand. He looks up and smiles, then she hugs him tightly. Terry walks away. She waits with Luke by the rectangle of white light. Jim turns around and opens his palm. He looks down at the rocket ship necklace and breaks into a wide smile. Phil nervously jabs the controls in the ERV.
ERV to Rover. Rover, this is ERV, do you copy?
Terry and Luke stagger through a billowing dust cloud as they leave the face.
ERV to Rover. Rover, this is ERV, do you read me?
They arrive by the wheels of the rover.
Phil, this is Luke, do you copy?
Phil checks his wristwatch and stares anxiously around the ERV's cockpit. Inside the face, a thin, transparent edge rises around the glowing disc. Jim looks up into the blackness, then steps onto the disc. A long, transparent tube descends over him. Steam rises through the tube, and a brilliant white light flashes around him. The light powers up through the tube, illuminating the inside of the face. Tall statues surround the tube, aliens with their arms linked below the high roof. The bright light powers into a wedge-shaped alien ship, which is stationed beneath a swirling orange vortex. The rover rolls through the storm outside.
I've lost the base camp beacon. We're driving blind.
I'm just gonna keep going on a straight line, okay? That's our only chance.
Jim scans around inside the ship, surrounded by white light. He looks down at his feet. In the rover.
1949, Terry, we're not gonna make it.
No. I've worked with Phil for 4 years, and I know Jim gave him a direct order, but he is not gonna leave without us.
Please. Luke. Terry. Jim. ERV, Rover. Rover, this is ERV. Do you read me?
Phil, do you read? This is Luke. We're coming in. Phil! Phil!
Phil isn't here right now. He left for Earth 5 minutes ago. Please leave a message after the beep.
He was just about to hit the ignition icon on the control monitor. He covers his helmet visor in relief. In the alien ship, liquid rises slowly around Jim's feet. He stands frozen to the spot, looking nervous as the liquid fills the tube. His breath clouds in front of his face. Jim looks panicked as the liquid rises over his face. He shuts his eyes and holds his breath. Terry and Luke head up the ladder on the side of the ERV. Phil opens up the hatch and leans out to help them inside.
Where is Jim?
Terry stops at the top of the ladder.
He got another ride.
Submerged in clear liquid, Jim's forced to breathe, emitting a big air bubble. He gawps at little glowing sparks flitting around the liquid, then smiles. It appears he can breathe. The US flag flutters amidst the storm as the ERV takes off from the surface of Mars. Lightning flashes above the billowing dust clouds, illuminating the face on Mars. The swirling orange vortex eats away at the face from inside. A burning tower of energy climbs through the storm. The alien ship rises through the center of the vortex. His eyes wide open in the breathable liquid on board the ship, Jim recalls moments from his life in quick succession. He thinks about the team. He remembers Luke with the birthday cake, Woody at the party, Phil and Ray on the space station, planting his foot in the dust on Luke's driveway, Woody losing his grip on the Remo in space, planting the US flag on Mars, entering the face, the alien's DNA. Maggie as a little girl, looking into a telescope and beaming with happiness. He takes the alien's hand. He lifts Maggie's veil at their wedding. The alien ship points its nose upwards and spins with increasing speed. The ship bolts through the storm and leaves Mars orbit, passing right by the floating ERV capsule. Terry looks through a porthole.
Dear God, look at that.
Is that him?
Have a great ride, Jim.
The alien ship powers towards another galaxy. The end. ITFC Audio Description.